It's 12 minutes past the hour of 3 o'clock. This is KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles. About a 10% chance of precipitation. Cloudy this afternoon with a high of around 78 degrees. Southeast winds at 15 miles per hour. A low this evening of 49 and expecting a sunny day on Tuesday with a high near 68. Currently it's 76 and overcast. Here on the campus of UL Lafayette at 4 o'clock, it's All Things Considered from NPR News. We continue this hour by heading into the interview studio with Judith Merriweather.
And joining me by telephone, currently in Georgia, but he lives in the Bay Area, is filmmaker and journalist John Beck. His film Harvest will be shown at Vermilionville on Monday, November 18th, 6:30 p.m. This is a part of the Southern Arts Southern Circuit of Independent Filmmakers, and Vermilionville is a screening partner for that series. And John will be in Lafayette at Vermilionville when his film Harvest is screened again on Monday, the 18th. And John, this is, you know, an interesting film. When I was reading about it, you know, I think that I don't usually take things on surface value, but when I think about the California wine industry, I think I kind of buy into the PR and the commercials that you see. You think of California as this pristine place, and the vineyards always seem so pristine. You know, the PR photos just always show these perfectly dressed people smiling. The vineyards are so orderly. But your film, Harvest, it belies all of that and goes behind those images. How did you get interested in the reality behind the California vineyards?
You know, I totally agree with you that it's always painted as the land of milk and honey or something. Mm-hmm. And if you go underneath it, you know, you really see kind of the blood, sweat, and tears that goes into every bottle of wine, the picking, the extreme labor. And there's actually a guy, a filmmaker in the film, David Raffinelli, who says at least once a day someone walks into the tasting room at his winery and says, "Oh, I want to live here. I can't believe how, you know, wonderful your life must be." And he says they don't see the other side. And so I got into it I was hired by a group called Wine Road to shoot a night harvest back in 2010, the year before I made this film. And I'd never seen a night harvest. And all of a sudden, I'm in the middle of this vineyard at 3 a.m. It's all lit up. It's surreal. It's like a UFO has landed in the middle of the vineyards. And I'm with this guy, Paul Fopiano, who's got a beard. Like, he looks like a Duck Dynasty guy or something, you know. And I'm surrounded by, you know, Mexican grape pickers, and there's a sense of urgency and drama, and I'm wondering how everyone got to be in this one moment at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I vowed that next harvest, 2011, I was going to try to follow all walks of life through the grape harvest.
Well, when you say a night harvest, a night picking, do they do that so they're out of the way by the time the tourists come the next day, or what?
It's not quite that covert. Really what they're trying to do is pick these grapes at the coldest possible temperature. It's
mm-hmm.
good for the sugar levels, the acidity. It's also good for the workers, too. I've seen guys out there at 2 in the afternoon on a really hot day, and it's really tough.
Mm-hmm.
So the workers
mm-hmm.
like the night picks as well.
Right. I know we think of kind of, you know, perfect California weather, 70 degrees, but in the valley, I guess, where some of those grapes are grown, it gets pretty hot.
It can get pretty hot, mm-hmm. and... The year that I followed the harvest, it happened to be one of the worst harvests in like 50 years because it rained really early.
Mm-hmm.
And rains can be really detrimental. They cause grape rot or botrytis.
Right.
And so once the threat of rain came in, they're picking around the clock, 24/7, like one guy's doing it 7 days in a row before the rains come.
Right. Well, again, I want to get back to this whole idea of, I guess, our image of the wine industry, because I think most of us probably know that there are a lot of immigrant workers, say, picking our avocados and artichokes in, you
right.
know, in California. But we don't think about that with the vineyards. I don't know how we think the grapes get picked. But, describe that to us, the sort of the scope of maybe immigrant labor that works in the vineyards.
You know, I was interested solely in how they, their journey, mm-hmm, what they mm-hmm. sacrificed to be there in that
mm-hmm,
vineyard at that
mm-hmm.
moment.
Okay.
And so I was following 12, a group of 12 female grape pickers, which is pretty rare to have an all-female grape picking
mm-hmm.
crew. And three of them really opened up to me, invited me to their houses, and they told me their border crossing stories.
Mm-hmm.
And they were treacherous. I mean, they were, you know, left in the desert at midnight trying to find their way, you know, crying and... And so you realize what links they've gone to be there. But I'm not, I didn't explore, I think someone could make a great documentary about whether they're legal, whether they're not, once they get here. But, you know, clearly three of them crossed, you know, illegally. So, I mean, it's very common. What often happens is wineries will partner up with vineyard management crews, and they bring the labor in. So there's one step removed from the kind of the process.
So, and you follow five family wineries where these women work. Could you tell us which wineries those are?
Oh, wow. Fopiano, Harvest Moon, Robledo, Raffinelli, and then there's Robert Hunter. And the women don't work for all of them. The women kind of work for a vineyard management crew who farms them out to other vineyards and wineries.
Right. So like you said, there's a remove, there's a buffer between the wineries themselves and the crews. So in a way, the wineries do get to just create their that lovely, happy, sunny picture, and they're not really dealing with these workers.
It's true. And, and it's no accident that I chose small family wineries. And some of those don't have vineyard management crews. But a huge corporate winery like Kendall Jackson or Behringer, they wouldn't let me shoot from across the road, across the highway. And so these are small family wineries who I developed a lot of trust with, you know, because I'm not doing an expose so much as I'm really picking people up and dropping them into a scene, a backstage scene that they would never get to see on their own.
Even if it's not an expose, it's certainly making us think a little bit more when we pull the cork out or unscrew the top of the wine.
Totally.
To think that something else is going on behind this. So describe the season for one of these women. I mean, how many days do they work? What is their life like?
You know, It lasts from about mid-August. They start picking champagne or sparkling grapes mid to late August into probably late October, early November. And they will meet at a Walmart in Windsor. This is a town north of Santa Rosa in the middle of Sonoma County at around midnight. And they'll caravan to whatever vineyard they're assigned to. And they'll pick till about daybreak. And there's a big issue of whether they're getting paid by the bin. And this seems like a technicality, but in the film you start to realize the women are getting paid to go slower than the men because of their attention to detail. And as the grapes start to rot on the vine, they're getting paid to cut the botrytis out of the cluster as they put it into the bin, which is a laborious process. And the women start to realize they don't think they're getting paid as much. And so the women get pretty upset near the, you know, midway through the film.
So do they have any recourse? I mean, how do they express their discontent? Who do they tell it to?
You know, they have Paulina is the leader of the crew. She's a woman who immigrated from Oaxaca, Mexico, and they start to voice their discontent with her. And then she's trying to tell them, she doesn't want to rock the boat too much, and she's trying to tell them, you know, you got to be happy with what you get. If it's a bad harvest, everyone suffers. And one thing is the humanity here, that the women, they have a sense of humor still. You'll see some scenes in the film where they've been working for 7 hours straight or so, and they still have a sense of humor. I don't want to give away too much, but it's actually, there's some funny scenes amidst
the backbreaking labor.
Yeah, right. You know, I picked with these women for about 4 hours, and they called me Tortuga. The turtle.
You're so slow.
It's tough work.
Wow. Now, you've worked in that area for a long time. You're based in the Bay Area. Have you done other stories in the area, Sonoma Valley? Do you know that beat pretty well?
Yeah, I was a staff writer for a newspaper in Sonoma County for about 12 years, and now I still freelance for them about twice a week. And I do a lot of independent video production as well. And so I did a documentary there called Worst in Show, and it's about ugly dog competitions. Have you ever heard of these?
No.
they're very heated. You know these kind of one-eyed, three-legged, hairless dogs, these Chinese crested dogs?
Oh, and every once in a while on the web
you'll see them. Yeah. Okay, so around June every year, press from the UK, Japan, Brazil, wherever, they'll converge on this small town in Sonoma County called Petaluma for the world's ugliest dog competition. And the owners are absolutely insane. One guy has bred four dogs throughout the course of his life.
Wow.
These hairless dogs. And it's competitive. I mean, and there's an ugly dog circuit.
Well, and that's, again, interesting, something that, you know, our image of that area of California, you think of very beautiful people, the fact that they would be breeding these really ugly dogs.
So it was too good to be true.
Oh, you know? And that was a feature-length film that you did.
Yes. Worst in Show. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it premiered on the Logo Channel, which is one of the Viacom channels, and you can find it on YouTube, I think iTunes. And then I have a new film called Monks of Vina. And it's filmed at a monastery north of Chico. Chico is like north of Sacramento, and it's in very hot upper Sacramento Valley. And these monks are trying to make wine in less than ideal conditions. But really, I'm just using the wine as a backdrop, and I'm exploring what it takes to become a monk.
Is this an old monastery?
It is, mm-hmm. Yes. It's a Trappist monastery. And they started it in the 50s, but it happens to be on the same property where Leland Stanford, the former governor of California, owned the largest vineyard in the world back in the 1880s. And he totally failed. He matched the wrong varietals with the wrong climate. 4,000 acres. It was bigger than any vineyard in the world at the time. And so they're trying to do something on a much smaller scale, and they've tried to learn from his lesson. But really, I'm following some new recruits who have just joined the monastery.
Interesting. When is that going to come out?
You know, that actually premieres at the Napa Valley Film Festival tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Right. So we should be able to, it should be available at some point.
Well, you know, if you go to monksofvina.com, V-I-N-A, you can see the trailer.
All right, yeah. monksofvina.com. I'll have to take a look at that. I'm going to tell people who may just be tuning in, my guest by telephone is filmmaker and journalist John Beck, who is based in the Bay Area in California. His film Harvest is being shown here in Lafayette on Monday the 18th at Vermilionville. It's a part of the Southern Arts Southern Circuit of Independent Filmmakers series. John will be here with his film on Monday, so you can see the film and chat with him about his work there, his the industry, and also this particular film. And so do you still drink wine from California after knowing all this, John?
I do, but to be honest, I like beer better more than wine. But I'm not interested in how beer is harvested.
Because you might not want to drink it. Well, we'll have to wait for that film to come.
No, I still drink wine occasionally. You know, it's funny, a lot of these events on this tour, they've set up like elaborate wine tastings around the screenings. Like tonight in Madison, Georgia, they're tasting 6 reds and 6 whites from Sonoma County.
Yeah, well, hopefully they'll taste them before they go in to see the film.
Right, exactly.
Instead of afterwards. Yeah. Well, I don't know what Vermilionville has set up.
Looking forward to it. It sounds like it's a living history museum or something.
Yes, it is. Is this the first time you've been in southern Louisiana?
You know, my grandparents grew up in Houma and went to Tulane and got married there and then moved to Jackson, Mississippi. So, no, I've been to Houma, if that counts as southern Louisiana. It does, right?
It's a little different than the culture around here, but it does, yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Tell me about Lafayette.
Well, Lafayette is very French. A lot of Acadians who originally came over from Nova Scotia settled here, and the culture is very strong, very vibrant, very much alive. A lot of people still speak French here, so you should enjoy it.
That's great. I'm looking forward to it.
Maybe you'll make a film about something around here.
Didn't Les Blank make documentaries
there? He did. Lot of them. Absolutely.
Yes.
About musicians and the culture, but he definitely loved the musicians here.
Yeah, I think I saw one on Mardi Gras in one of the small towns there.
Absolutely. So very, very rich place for filmmakers.
Yeah.
Well, we'll look forward to welcoming you here and hoping that you enjoy your time here. Again, John Beck, filmmaker from California, is showing his film Harvest at Vermilionville this coming Monday, November 18th. And it's, I think you can buy tickets at the door, or you could call Vermilionville ahead of time. It will be in the Performance Center. Well, John, thank you so much for taking a moment to talk with us, and
I know people
can find more information about you and your films on the web.
Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you, John.
All right.